Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. Certainly thankful that you've been able to join us. And I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy, and joined by Chip Horton.
Hello, hello.
And always thankful for the opportunity, not just to spend this time together, but to open the pages of God's Word. And if you're not in the car or maybe working away at your desk this morning, I encourage you to grab your copy of God's Word and be opening up to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and we'll join you there in just a minute. First, I want to remind you of some upcoming events as we do from day to day, and the Summer Youth Series continues. We're a little over halfway done now, and I want to remind you, July 25th, coming up at the Carriage Oaks Congregation in Bossier City, Louisiana. They are going to be talking about pastor and elder and how that word has been stolen away, if you will. And so as we continue that series of reclaiming God's vocabulary, hope you can join us next Tuesday night, July 25th in Shreveport for that study.
All right. And also, we have the opportunity coming up to be involved with Camp Arklatex as they are reaching out and going to have this song leading session that will help us in our abilities to lead the corporate assembly. And so from July the 31st to August the 5th, as we said, Camp Arklatex is putting on this session. The cost is $125. You can register even up till today. I know today's the 19th, but it's right around the corner. You can get online at camparklatex.org. That's C-A-M-P-A-R-K-L-A-T-E-X, camparklatex.org. And that's going to be registering for session 3, and it is ages 10 and up. And Doyle has left his phone number here. If you'd like to contact him, you can contact him, Doyle Bruce, at 817-798-6557. Again, that's a singing school week at Camp Arklatex, July the 31st through August the 5th.
All right, and here's one out of order here, but this Thursday, July 21st, at 7 p.m., you can join the 2016 North Texas Family Summer Series. And this is typically the Fort Worth area, western side of the Metroplex there. But the Godly Church of Christ will be hosting. And as they continue looking at the theme, Why I Love Being a Christian, Darren Schroeder is going to be speaking on I Love Having Peace and Security.
Awesome.
And so that'll sure be a good study.
And we have been reminding you for some weeks now about the 11th Annual Restoration Revisited series that's going on at the Meads Chapel Church of Christ up there in Nashville, Tennessee. And we would invite you to go. I know that you may not be able to attend on Sunday, but they are actually starting on Sunday with Gifts the Father Gave. But then each night, as you might very well have opportunity, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, they're at the Meads Chapel Church. They've invited you out at 7 o'clock each night. Monday night, David Sane is speaking on guidance. Robert Taylor is coming to town and will speak on Tuesday night on strength. And then Mike Hickson is going to speak on Wednesday night, August the 10th then, on freedom. And each particular night, it has been noted here that Bill Hunter is going to be leading all of the singing each night. So not only can you count on good gospel preaching, but you can count on some great singing as well. So remember, August the 7th through 10th, if you're in the Nashville, Tennessee area, Meads Chapel is putting on their 11th Annual Restoration Revisited series, August 7th through 10th.
All right. And then also I want to remind you, this Friday is the registration deadline for Discipleship U in Dripping Springs, Texas. And that is actually going to be hosted August 5th through 7th. But if you'd like to go, they do ask that you register ahead of time to help with possible available housing and to get those numbers to know what they're looking for. And I'd been saying high school. Their flyer does say middle school and high school age, and so encourage your youth to look forward to that. And the theme this year, experience the majesty of Jesus or encountering Christ. And so That is going to be kicking off at 1:30 on Friday afternoon, and it runs through the morning worship hour Sunday morning. And so get online at discipleshiputexas.com, and you can find the flyer, the schedule, and more information about that event online.
All right, and last but I guess not least, as we commonly say, Brother McCain has got us a flyer here in the studio for their gospel meeting coming up on August the 7th. Mike Vestal is coming to town, and he is going to be discussing that entire week, the God we serve. And so it starts on Sunday the 7th, and our summer youth series is going to be a part of that series as well. That night, Monday night, we're going to be considering under Mike's leadership, the God that we serve is not dead. And so we'll have that opportunity Monday night. But each night of that meeting, they have invited you out to the Oak Grove Church of Christ there in Mount Pleasant, Texas, at 7 p.m. to listen to these wonderful lessons that Mike Vestal will be delivering. So mark your calendars for the Oak Grove congregation over there in Mount Pleasant, Texas, August 7th through the 11th. This wonderful gospel meeting with Mike Vestal.
All right, and I appreciate that. And, you know, one of the things I appreciate about the Oak Grove congregation there, as well as many in our area, we're not surrounded by a lot of what I would call large congregations, yeah. But we're surrounded by a lot of active congregations. And even small in numbers there, they continue to do a great work. And so an encouragement to us all. Hope that you'll mark those events on your calendar and try to make all that you can. And as I always remind us, it encourages those congregations doing the work, and it's certainly going to be an encouragement to us as well. Well, as we mentioned a moment ago, we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 this morning. And I have a hard time sometimes looking at chapter 9 and just figuring out exactly the flow of this chapter. I think in some ways Paul is accomplishing two things at once. And there's some of this chapter that he's defending his actions and his apostleship. It seems to be that there was a charge here at Corinth that's going to make a number of accusations against Paul. He's not a real apostle. Paul, he doesn't even trust in himself enough. He won't even accept money for what he's doing. I think it's probably one of those catch-22s. If he accepts money, he would have been accused of being in it for the money. If he doesn't accept money, they say, well, you're not really an apostle then. And but there certainly seems to be a number of charges against him. And, and both 1 and 2 Corinthians, there's some sections that deal with the defense of his apostleship. And so I see that flowing here through chapter 9. But I also, in the maybe the broader concept or the scope of this book, he seems to fit this chapter in the idea of using himself as an example, not to boast, not to, as we would say, maybe toot his own horn, but rather he uses himself as an example here, because in chapter 8 he's talked about here the idea of Christian liberty and how we ought to have the attitude to deny what we might call our rights and rather suffer wrong for the good of someone else. And that's not an easy lesson for us, I think, especially maybe as Americans and as Christians that live in America. You know, we're all about our rights and standing up for me and what's owed me. And a number of times Paul's willing to show us, hey, I'm willing to forego what I could call as my right if it's for the good of others, if it's for the good of the church. And so we see his personal example that flows throughout this chapter.
That reminds me a little bit of Genesis 13. You know, where Abraham would give up, you know, what liberty really belonged to him. He could have told Lot, you go yonder and I'll stay here. But, you know, he surrendered that. He said, we be brethren. Great example.
And so as we jump in, let's go and look at maybe the first three verses. And one has titled this, An Affirmation of Paul's Apostleship. One through three.
Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. Mine answer to them that do examine me is this.
Okay, and so that's going to continue in this, the next section, and he's going to give a kind of a number of answers, if you will, that could defend his choices and his actions. But he begins with this this idea of a defense. Mm-hmm. Paul had lived in such a way that he would waive his rights and his privileges for the best interest of other people. Mm-hmm. And so there were many things that he could do, but he was willing to give up for the good of others. And so even here, am I not an apostle? Mm-hmm. Are you doubting the things that I say or the force of the things that I say? Are we not free? I think there again, that idea of liberty to live as Christians here. And they ought to know that he is an apostle because they're witnesses of that work and that labor that he's done. Mm-hmm. There in the middle of verse 1, I skipped over part of that, I guess. Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? You know, mm-hmm. that again was a qualification of an apostle, one that has seen the resurrected Christ. And he says, I have. And then, are you not my work in the Lord? Mm-hmm. You've seen the work that I've done among you. The spiritual gifts that we're going to talk about later in this book, where did those come from? Mm-hmm. did those not come from the laying on of my hands?
Right.
And so here, yes, you've seen the work that I've done. You've seen the confirmation of the work that I have done among you. And I think that's his point there in verse 2. Even if it's doubted elsewhere, you ought to not doubt it there at Corinth,
right,
because you've been eyewitnesses of these things. You yourselves are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord.
Mm-hmm. That confirmation.
That very work that he had done among them ought mm-hmm. to remind them of the very fact that, yes, I am an apostle. And so they needed to give respect. They needed to give ear unto the things that Paul was saying. And so now he's going to set forth this this defense that's going to bolster the idea that, yes, he is an apostle, but, yes, even in that, he hasn't always exercised every right or demand every right that could have been his.
True.
And so, if you want, let's go ahead and let's go on down through verse 12. And verse 4 through 12, remember he said here in verse 3, mine answer, my explanation, if you will, my defense, to those that would examine me, that are going to question me, is this. Well, what is that? Let's go on verse 4 through 12.
All right. Have we not power to eat and to drink? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working? Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth the flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man? Or saith not the law the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? Or saith he altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ.
Right. A lot of this section, and this is kind of where I have that hard time sometimes looking, what's Paul's defense of his apostleship mm-hmm. here? What's this idea of his example of willing to go forego his rights? And maybe really both of those arguments that he's placing forward before them spill together.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have the right to do these things, and he's establishing that right, but at the same time he's willing to show, but I haven't used them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've opted to, I've chosen not to use all these things.
That's right.
Have we not the power to eat and drink, as he goes back to verse 4? Of course they did. Yeah. They had to have sustenance. They had to be provided for. So as he's traveling about, those needs were needs that needed to be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so it's only natural, even as he's come here to Corinth and to other places, whether he's laboring to provide that for himself or the congregation mm-hmm. is providing for those things, that was a right that he could enjoy.
Right.
Do we not, verse 5, have the power to lead about a sister, a wife, even as other apostles, as the brethren of the Lord, as Cephas? That one's always interesting there because here you have Peter. It's another reminder. Peter was married. Mm-hmm. Catholics, you know, of course, we think there and how they want to place Peter up, set him up as the first pope, which he was not.
Right.
But it goes back to that example. Here's Peter that you claim, you know, no pope and priest could be married, but here's Peter that was leading about a wife. Mm-hmm. And ultimately what Paul is saying there is he said we have the same right.
Yeah.
We don't do that. It appears here neither Barnabas or Paul were married, mm-hmm. but he said we could have that right. Would it be right for her to travel along with us? Would it be right to need support to help provide for that family? Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, all of those things were true.
But it just as a side note, did you notice that part about a believing wife?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was an interesting comment that would be, you know, directed by him. You know, even to think that. You know, maybe this is stretching out too far, but maybe even an unbelieving wife might have lessened an influence along mm-hmm. the way or something. But I thought it was interesting. You know, these things just kind of pop up in front of you, a believing wife.
Right.
I thought that was great. A sister in Christ.
Mm-hmm. And so she could be continuing in that work and have mm-hmm. the right to be helped support it in that fashion. And a lot of these, as you go through here, they're questions that basically are answered as he asks them.
Yeah.
you recognize, you wouldn't deny these things. Mm. So why has it become an issue with Paul? Is it just verse 6? Is it just me and Barnabas? Are we not allowed to forego our working? You know, he's come here to Corinth. He's labored there. Even with his own hands, he's provided for his needs as a tent maker. But could we not have focused full-time on the ministry, mm-hmm. On the work before us? But we forbore. We
yeah,
would forbear that right. We would place it aside, and we've done it for your good, mm-hmm. that we might be able to come and to work here without charge to the Corinthians. And so I think also within that, though, you see the understanding that the other apostles had forborne working.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not all of them. Maybe they provided for themselves at times. But there were at least occasions there that even they weren't working and providing for themselves. Could Barnabas and I not also do that?
Mm-hmm.
Again, these are rights, but they're not obligations.
That's right.
He could do these things. But he had opted not to.
Mm-hmm.
He had provided for himself at Ephesus, Acts chapter 20. That comes up as he's speaking to the elders there at Ephesus in Acts chapter 20. He mentions in verse 34 and 35 that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to those that were with me. And I showed you. How that so laboring you ought to support the weak. And that's what he's done. He's done it by example.
Mm-hmm.
Acts 18, verse 3 and 4, he worked when he came here to Corinth.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other times when he was supported. There were other times when he took the donations of those that were willing to help support him. And so this was an optional matter.
Mm-hmm.
And he had not harmed them. He had not wronged them by opting not to. As he continues, you drop on down in verse 7. In the world, we recognize this.
Yep.
A soldier that's going off, he doesn't provide his own food and all of his own necessities. He expects that the one that's called him up to war is going to help provide for those things.
Right.
So does he go at his own cost or at someone else's? Mm-hmm. The one that goes forth and he labors in a vineyard, does he not eat of that? Mm-hmm. Sure, some of it's for sale. Some of it's maybe to go to support even the rent on that land under a feudal-type system. There are various things there. But still, there was that understanding that he could provide for his family off of that labor.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a shepherd, is he not going to eat of the flock? And is he not going to partake of the milk of that flock? Well, sure he is. He's laboring there. All of those, we would say, oh, yes, they have an absolute right. Well, I've been laboring among the churches.
Mm-hmm.
Do I not have a right to be supported by those through whom with whom I've been laboring?
You know, it's interesting, as we have the opportunity to listen to Paul speak here and watch him write. You know, sometimes I grab some examples that are kind of out there, and people have a hard time wondering, why did he choose that example? But notice what he chooses here. A preacher, a worker in the gospel, is compared to, by Paul, a soldier,
mm-hmm.
right? A soldier, one that goes to war. And he also uses the example of a farmer, a vine dresser, one that would work in the vineyard. Another good example. Even Jesus would use that.
Mm-hmm.
And a shepherd, one that would guide even a flock of God's people in the teaching of the word. You know, certainly nowadays, we hear a lot of that pastoring going on around us, and so people understand even the point of, you know, trying to shepherd a flock. But notice the three ways that he talks about this and the points that he makes. He goes forth and contends with the world as a soldier, as the vine dresser. He had planted, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had planted. Apollos had watered. God gave the increase, chapter 3. And he feeds the Christians, God's spiritual food.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help but see that. That's really a good 3-point sermon, maybe, mm-hmm. for someone that's listening out there. You know, I just those things, like I mentioned, you know, the believing wife, some of these things just pop up at me, and
right.
I can't help but comment.
And all fitting examples, but also one of the things that I love reading through here, how reasonable is Paul?
Absolutely.
You know, these aren't just emotional arguments. They're not Paul just blowing up and getting mad. Let's reason through this.
Right.
Think about this for a minute,
right.
And about what you're saying. And so he's used those examples of the world that they could attach to. But wait a minute. Do we just say these things of ourselves? Or does not even the law, as we go back and maybe he's thinking of some of them knowing the things of the past and of the law of Moses, does not even the law also say this? It's written in the law of Moses. And you can go back to Deuteronomy 25 and verse 4. Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn.
Right.
It's not right to use all of that labor and not reward the one who has labored.
That's right.
And if God so cares for the oxen, how much more those that are made in his own image?
Mm-hmm.
How much more does he care about man? And so God has provided for the care of that ox, but ultimately he reminds us that lesson wasn't for the ox.
Right.
That lesson was for the man, because that's what he's going to point out in verse 10.
Mm-hmm.
Does he say that for our sakes or for the ox? And no doubt it's for our sake. Because then also, as he continues there in verse 10, the one that plows should plow in hope, and he that threshes should thresh in hope, that he might be a partaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these have that scriptural reasoning here that he's trying to bring forth. And so really the kind of that conclusion in verse 11, if I have sown unto you spiritual things, is it really a great thing if we've reaped of carnal things?
Mm-hmm.
We could have the benefit of the worldly things. And really all that Paul talks about there, I believe, would be the necessities of life.
Sure.
Provide for his food, provide for his clothing. There's that understanding. The spiritual things are greater than the physical. And we've labored among you in spiritual things. We've helped lead you to eternal life. Is it really some great thing that we've asked just a small portion of the physical things that you have been blessed with. And certainly the case would be there that no. And so if others could partake of that power, could not also we?
Yeah.
And certainly the answer there was yes. But, verse 12, we have not used these this power. Mm-hmm. Instead, we suffer all things lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. There, again, we get to see the heart and the mind of Paul. We could have done all of these things. But instead, we've chosen to suffer. We have not used that power. We have not used that expectation that we could have, and also that we might not hinder the gospel of Christ. And I think we get to see again into his heart that here he didn't want to be chargeable against them. He didn't want anyone to be able to accuse him of preaching for money. And sadly, it seems there's at least to some degree that's backfired on him in Corinth. Mm-hmm. And how often do you do somebody a good deed, a favor, and that gets turned around back on you? And some wickedness is accused to you.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that didn't stop Paul from doing what was right.
No, his first concern was the gospel.
Mm. And so what a great example to us. Again, that example, we have all of those rights. Yes, I'm an apostle. Yes, we're laborers. We could have done all these things, but we have chosen not to.
You know, we probably each know a or several men in our lifetimes that have worked in the gospel that have never received a dime of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they were, financially free and from another, you know, secular activity or something along those lines. Maybe they lived in their own home, not the church's home, for one reason or another. You know, any of those things pop up, and it just, you know, it really helps me to understand here the beauty of that. You know, the beauty of, because I know one man right now that I was thinking of that, you know, he's aged now, but I know for years because of his secular work, you know, he's never taken a dime that I know of unless, mm-hmm. you know, obviously I'm not privy to it, but, you know, certainly he had the right,
mm-hmm.
you know, to ask that of them, but he didn't. Yeah, and, you know, even, you know, his reputation and all that just continues to be a light,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, we know those things, maybe others don't, but... Mm-hmm. Certainly, we're seeing here that the church certainly has an obligation to support a man,
right?
And the preacher has an expectation, but you know you can forego that, mm-hmm. you know, circumstances allow.
Mm-hmm. And so, really, what I see throughout all of that, I think Paul is making that defense for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it all goes back to, you know, are you going to push your rights? Are you going to push everything that you could demand? Are you going to try to do that which is best for the church?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful image that flows through here as well.
Absolutely.
Let's go on with that same idea, and a large part of this talks about maybe why he has chosen that. Pretty big chunk here, but let's go on. We went through verse 12. Let's go 13 through 23.
All right, 13, beginning. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple? And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar. Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of those things, neither have I written these things, that it should be so done unto me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, as without law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you.
I think the word that screams out to me as you read through those verses is servant. Isn't that how he's already addressed himself? You know, even last week we had the opportunity to look at Paul in chapter 4. And he's reminding them, how do I want you to think about me? But as a minister, as a steward. Mm-hmm. I'm a servant of God that's entrusted with his things. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see here. Paul, to the utmost, he says, I want to be a servant. And that is going to slap at the attitude of the Corinthians, who are boasting of themselves. They're suffering from this issue of pride. And now we get to look at the example of Paul, and he says, I did it in self-sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And that's really the attitude, I think, also that he wants to see in them.
Yeah.
And so as he continues there, and we back up into verse 13, yes, those that are ministering in the holy things, as you go back to the example of the temple, and they lived of those things.
Yeah.
And when we look at the Levites, they didn't receive their own inheritance. Mm-hmm. They didn't need that land to provide for themselves as long as Israel was following God's plan. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 1, the priests, the Levites, and all the tribe of Levi shall have no part or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Lord made by fire and his inheritance. Mm-hmm. And so the nation was going to provide for those that were laboring about the service of God.
That's right.
And now Paul's bringing that forward, and that's what God has done in the New Testament. The Lord has ordained, verse 14, that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. There's mm-hmm. there's God's divine ordinance, if you will, mm-hmm. You can and should support those who are going forth and laboring in the kingdom and doing a good work. Support them, encourage them, make that work possible. It may be that I have been blessed with this world's good, so why not use that to help that spread of the gospel? Mm-hmm. And so here he goes, and he reminds them, this is what God has said, but, verse 15, I use none of those things, and I'm not asking for it.
Right.
You know, maybe there's somebody at Corinth by now that's saying, oh, here's Paul, he's about to ask for money. No, that's not what I want. I use none of those things, and I'm not writing these that you should do this now. And notice the forcefulness of verse 15. It would be better for me to die than someone to make my glorying void.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for that. I don't want anyone to be able to take away the good that I have done by simply preaching the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to see again the heart and the motive of Paul. It's not personal glory that he's speaking of there. But I think it's that idea of being a servant.
Yeah.
I have labored, and I have worked, and I've done it for God and for the good of the kingdom. His glory was in the gospel.
That's right.
To be able to go forth and say, I preached the gospel, and I didn't do it for money. I would that more could say that. And I speak there particularly of, you know, the false teachers that, you know, part of the problem Christians have as we go forth into the world, there are those false teachers that have gone forth and that have done this for money. Mm-hmm. They'll speak smooth things. They've amassed to themselves great treasures. And it's easy for the world to say everybody's in it for the money.
Yeah,
but they're not. They're not in it for the money when they're just asking for help to support their families, that they might be able to be unhindered by the worldly concerns as they go forth to preach the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says in verse 16, though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of because it's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Woe is me as I preach not the gospel. Again, why do you preach, Paul? I don't preach because of the money.
Mm-hmm.
I preach because I have to. Paul recognizes a sense of obligation. And I think that's something I love throughout all of Paul's writings. We get to see this kind of duality here, that Paul recognizes there is an obligation, and that's why I'm preaching the gospel, mm-hmm. but there is also a great honor and a grace that's bestowed upon me that yeah. I get to handle the sacred things of God. And I love to see that attitude. You know, it's never about Paul. It's never about his fame. It's not about his fortune. It's about preaching the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. And
absolutely.
So he didn't want money to hinder that. And that's why he's chosen here at Corinth anyway, and at certain places, not to allow that to be stripped away. And so he has preached the gospel. There was this necessity.
Yeah, I remember Brother Mosier in school, you might have had the same experience, but more than one time he said something to the effect of, if you came here to preach to get rich, you've made a mistake. You know, not that, you know, to say that, you know, that disparagingly, but it's not about the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the burning fire that's in your bones, the necessity that has, you know, not everybody has the ability to speak in public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but if you do, then use that, you know, and don't look back, you know, don't take hold of the plow and then look back.
Mm-hmm.
Plow forward, man.
And so we see this charge, even as it continues in verse 17, if I do this willingly, I have a reward, but if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me.
Mm.
And I think there again, we see that there is a willingness of Paul to preach the gospel. But I think he's also reminding us that he's not preaching the gospel for his glory, to bring something to himself. That would be his reward, and there were those who did so. But he's doing it in this sense against his will because there is a charge
mm-hmm.
that has been given unto him.
That's right.
He recognizes his debt indebtedness, and so he preaches the gospel. Well, with that being the case, then what is your reward, Paul? Well, that I preach the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
That is my joy.
That's right.
That here God has entrusted me with this inspired message to take it forth into the world, and it's helping to save souls. That's my joy. That's my honor. And that I can do that without charge? Man, that's a wonderful thought for Paul there.
His reward was coming from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking forward to that. I mean, you know, I think it was over in Philippians 4 maybe that we found out that, you know, Corinth did at one point send him some help, you know, but nevertheless, he wasn't, you know, really looking forward to that. He was looking forward to the reward that would come from his Father in heaven. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
A good and faithful servant.
And that idea. His reward was certainly in the preaching of the gospel, and so he would not abuse that power.
Mm-hmm.
And, Will, I had a thought there, and maybe it'll come back to me in a little bit, but what a great attitude there of Paul, that I want to preach the gospel and not allow anything to get in that way.
Yeah, I know that some of the kids, we've had the example to work with them, you know, and go and rake Miss So-and-so's yard or something. And the idea that you do something that takes a great deal of effort, may take an entire day, and you receive no financial mm-hmm. reward. You know, at the end of the day, when you lay your head down, you feel good about
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hopefully we're instilling that in them. I mean, not that you should work your whole right. life without pay, but you know, that there are things that you do for the kingdom of heaven that have nothing to do with financial reward, mm-hmm. you know, and you feel, you know, great inside. That's the joy.
And so he set himself up there as that servant, and that's a reminder. I'm a servant unto you, but ultimately I'm a servant unto God.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that in those next few verses. Again, verses that at times have been twisted and corrupted, but he's going to begin reminding them, I am free from all men. I'm not your servant. I'm not mm-hmm. your to command or control. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to please you. I'm trying to please God. And yet, even though I'm free from all men, I've made myself a servant unto all mm-hmm. that I might gain the more. You know, some have said, well, maybe he's talking about being free from all and that he's not being supported. That certainly fits in this case here. But I think just that idea that ultimately, who am I trying to please? And I work for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And as such, I am striving to serve others for the salvation of souls.
Mm-hmm.
And to the Jew, I became as a Jew, that mm-hmm. I might gain them. He was born under the Jewish system. That's he right. lived as a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily what he's talking about here. I think here more the idea that he would not put a stumbling block between him and the Jew.
Right.
If I can reach them on their level, then I would do that.
Right.
If that meant giving up a personal liberty because maybe there was something the Jew was uncomfortable with, I'll give up that personal liberty.
Mm-hmm.
To them that are under the law, I acted as one that was under the law, that I might gain them.
Mm-hmm.
What's your end game, if you will? I hate to word it that way, but what's your goal? I want to gain them. I want to gain their soul.
That's right.
And so also, verse 21, to those that are without law, I became as without law. Certainly the reminder in those parentheses there, I never became an outlaw. I never went outside of the law of God. I was always under the law of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just that reminder, we can place obstacles unnecessarily between people.
Mm-hmm.
We see that with Timothy and Titus, I believe. You know, here Timothy, people knew that he had a Jewish mother and a Greek father. Well, he was going to have Timothy circumcised because there was no reason. He wasn't doing it for justification of the law, but there was no reason to put an obstacle
mm-hmm.
between Timothy and those that he would try to preach to.
Right.
But Titus was tried to force to be circumcised for the reasons of justification, and Paul put his foot down.
Mm-hmm.
We're not having that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there we see an example of what he's talking about here. We'll remove those obstacles that we can so that we can reach those that are around us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people try to use this and we'll go all different directions with it. And, I went and I drank with them at the bar because I wanted to reach them that were at the bar. Well, we're not trying to go outside of the law of Christ.
Right.
Can certainly try to reach those that are around us. Verse 22, through the weak I became as the weak, that I might gain them.
Mm-hmm.
I would refer you back there to chapter 8. There he's talking about the weak and the strong and the eating of the meat or not. And he said, guess what? If eating meat's going to cause somebody to stumble, I'll throw the meat out.
I don't have to have it.
Mm-hmm. If I'm trying to teach the gospel to a vegetarian, I'm not going to invite him over for a hamburger. I mean, I would love a hamburger,
mm-hmm.
but guess what? I'm willing to eat some rabbit food for the night we don't have a stumbling block between us.
Yep.
And certainly those are some great lessons there, and it sets forth again that idea of Paul as a servant. I'm willing to go that extra mile, forego my liberties and my rights as they might be perceived for the help of others.
Mm.
And I do all that, he says, verse 23, for the gospel's sake.
Hmm.
That I might be partaker thereof with you.
Ultimately, as you and I both know, it's for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm.
When you say the gospel's sake, you mean Christ's sake, for the kingdom's sake, mm-hmm. you know, for the blood-bought kingdom's sake.
Mm-hmm. And so watch how you're living and have that idea of self-denial, self-sacrifice, servanthood. And we're going to see that even as we close out the chapter. That need for self-denial in verse 24 through 27.
Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway.
Okay, and so again, that need for self-denial, and we might even talk about focus. There's a lot that I think we could talk about from those verses, and unfortunately, time would fail us of every direction we could go. But he's talked about his personal example here. That he was willing to forego those things that he had a right or an expectation of in order to reach out to others. And I think we see that in the self-sacrifice that he talks of here. they that run in a race, they all run. Everyone is out there, and I don't know about you. I don't sign up for a race in order to come in last.
Right, right, right.
Therefore, I don't sign up for a race, but that's a, that's a separate issue. But when I sign up for that race, my goal, my aim is I want to win. Hmm. I want to succeed. And I know when I do so that one's going to receive the prize, but I'm entering in order to win that prize.
Amen.
And so run that you may obtain.
Yep.
So in the Christian life, you run like you're trying to come in number one.
Mm-hmm.
You strive. You put forth effort. Our goal is to get to heaven. He's not saying one person's going to achieve that. He's saying I ought to be running as that one who's trying to win the race.
Mm-hmm.
What's that take? It takes some self-discipline. It takes some self-denial. Again, why am I not a runner and an athlete? I'm not only not built for it, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not really ready to give up my hamburger.
I'm not really
willing to give up my strawberry shake or whatever it might be. But, you know, I talk to some of these people sometimes, or you hear these stories of those that are Olympic athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about the years of training and the denial, and, you know, we gave up time with friends. We gave up time with family. We spent every day practicing. We put ourselves on these diets. We exercised and all the time in order to win, in order to get to that level. I think that's what Paul's talking about here. What's heaven worth to you?
Mm.
What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to lay aside? What are you willing to put behind you that you can stretch forth to that goal?
Wow.
You know, I don't want anything to come in that way of myself or others. And so every man is striving for the mastery is going to be temperate, that idea of self-control in all things.
And even prior to that, competing, that word agonizomai, that agonizing, struggling, strive to enter in through the straight gate, Luke would say, this agonizing, you know, the same word is used of Jesus as he prayed, Luke said, agonizing, in agony, as it were. So it really gets us, you know, a full context of what he's talking about. Agonize. It's going to take a lot of effort, just like you said.
And so they do it. They put all this effort forth. They agonize in this to master what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes self-control. But they do it to obtain a corruptible crown. You think back to the time of the Grecian Games, even though I think Corinth had a biannual event or an every other year event. And they would strive, but oftentimes it was for a laurel wreath.
Yeah.
a wreath of twigs that were wound together. And after a few days, the leaves wither.
Yeah.
After a few years, I imagine even the twigs become brittle and it fades away.
Yeah.
And we think today, oh, we're so much better. We've got gold now. Well, guess what? The gold isn't going to last forever.
Nope.
It's going to fade away. It's going to be forgotten. So they strive for all of that, but at the end of it, they receive that corruptible crown. But Paul says, we're Christians, and we're doing it because we receive a crown that is incorruptible. A crown of life, James 1 and verse 12. A crown of righteousness, 2 Peter 4, verse 8. A crown that of glory that does not fade away, 1 Peter 5 and verse 4. Now, that's what we're striving for. And so if they're going to put that effort into something that will decay, what kind of effort will you put into an everlasting, an incorruptible crown? And so Paul says again, going back to his own example in verse 26, therefore I so run. I don't run uncertainly. I don't meander about. I've got my eyes fixed on the goal. And I fight, not as one that beats the air. I'm not, I think someone related that to shadow boxing.
Right.
I'm not just out there throwing practice punches. I'm in it to win. Again, I've got that goal ahead of me. I think there of 2 Timothy 1 and verse 12, for the which cause I suffer these things. I'm willing to endure all these things. Nevertheless, I'm not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. There's my goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm fighting for. That's what I'm aiming for. And so as we talk about chapter 9 here, Paul's receiving of money, not receiving of money, all this was part of his plan that, number one, I've got to focus on heaven. Number two, I want to take as many with me as I can, and I'm not going to let anything get in that way. There's his dedication. And as he does these things, he says in verse 27, I keep under my body. I bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. He knows what it means to have self-control. And if you want to talk about once saved, always saved, if there's anybody that ought to have applied to, you think of the Apostle Paul and the work and the labor that he did. And guess what? He still expresses the idea he could be lost.
Yep.
He's preached to others. He saved souls. He's been an apostle. But guess what? If I don't practice self-control, I could be lost. If that's true of the Apostle Paul, it's true of every single one of us today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need that same dedication and that same control here that he says, I keep under my body. I've exercised that self-control. He recognizes that possibility of apostasy.
Mm.
And so if I've preached to others, I don't want to be cast away. I don't want to be left behind. Not to use that reference to the,
right,
to the movies or the books. That's right. Not what we have an idea thereof. But I want to hear at the end of it, well done,
right.
Enter in. And so he would labor, he would work at it. Certainly a wonderful chapter there. And we think about the great examples. Again, I'm going to remind you, I think we see within this Paul's defense of his apostleship, but we also see within it his great example of self-sacrifice, of selflessness, and all to the glory of God and the advancement of his kingdom.
Amen. I know, just as a historical reference, you know, as he ends talking about these races and the games, you know, it seems to me that I remember that for 30 days prior to the actual games, you know, they had to attend the gym and they had to exercise and fulfill all these conditions, you know, that had been set before them if they were going to be allowed to get into the games. And so if they failed in even one of those qualifications, then they were, you know, disqualified. Mm-hmm. And recently we've seen that a lot of the Russian team members have been disqualified because of evidently doping. And so even though it were this one offense, that's all it takes to disqualify a person.
Mm-hmm. So to Timothy, Paul's writing, and he talks about you have to strive lawfully.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a great reminder there that we're doing it according to the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so some great thoughts before us. Again, certainly more. I think we could exhaust through that chapter, but what a wonderful example of Paul and his humility, of his service, of his desire to help the Corinthians to grow and to be the best that they could be. And so we'll leave off there for this morning and hope that you can join us again, Lord willing. Chip and Richard will be in tomorrow morning and get to lead us in that study of 1 Corinthians chapter 10.
Chapter 10.
So I hope you'll be back with us 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. And continue listening even today right here on the Gospel Radio Network.
See ya.